We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
My name is Jari Bolander. Welcome to the Entrepreneur Ethos Podcast. On this podcast, we're going to take a deep dive into the traits, values, beliefs, and skills of all sorts of entrepreneurs to learn how to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient world. Let's get started. Hey, everyone. Stay tuned to the end of the interview, as usual, where I'll give you some actionable insights that I learned from my guest. These insights are also in the show notes. As always, thanks for listening. Thanks for the ratings and reviews. Thanks for the tweets, the retweets, the emails. Just thanks for everything. Now, on to my guest for today, Mario Nafal, founder of NFT Technologies. Mario may not have the Midas touch, but he's certainly discovered some of the secrets of growing successful businesses. He started out selling blenders by knocking on doors in 2012. There he honed his skills in how to effectively walk potential customers through a sales funnel, from getting their attention, having them try the product, then selling it. His company hit seven figures in the first year and grew exponentially from there. He believes one of the keys to success is timing. That doesn't mean that everything he's tried has been a phenomenal success. He's had some failures too. 4 years after launching his first business, Mario started Go Global, the precursor to what he's now doing at the Athena Group, a consulting services group that helps companies scale and grow. Mario's latest venture, NFT Technologies, is now getting ready to go public, the first of its kind to do so. NFT Technologies invests in and creates businesses in the metaverse space that specializes in cryptocurrency and NFTs, non-fungible tokens. The metaverse, he explains, is an alternative digital reality space with huge potential for growth. The metaverse is now what the internet was to the 1990s, according to Mario. He sees huge potential in this space over the long run. Now, let's get better together. Mario Nafal, welcome to the podcast.
Jari, thanks for having me, man.
Well, you're quite welcome because it appears like today you probably are like kind of going public.
Yeah, so we're in the process of going public. It's going public in later this month, most likely. But we're going through a lot of, there's a lot of things that need to be to get done this month. So it makes it, first time I take a company public. So it's interesting experience.
Wow. Well, we're just going to have to talk about that because that's part of, you're doing that through the Athena Group, which is a group of companies that you guys have. And let's dig all into that. But before we do that, let's quickly just go over how you got to do what you're doing today.
Sure. So quick thing, the company going public is unrelated to Athena.
Okay.
I have to be very careful about what I say because when it's a public entity, everything I say, you know, it gets sensitive and my life just changes. And as a person that speaks his mind like crazy, I'm going to get in a lot of trouble. But yes, I got started a few years ago now. So back in 2012, started in e-com before anything else. You know, now a CEO of a company going public, doing a lot of investments, investing massively run a pretty large consulting firm in crypto, or run a growth hacking agency. All the stuff that I do now, it all started with one company, an e-com company called Fruity, which still exists today. I don't run it, but I own it. And it's an e-com company in over 30 countries. I started door knocking in Australia, literally going door to door selling products until I landed on a product that worked. And now Fruity is a global brand that sells high-end kitchen appliances.
Wow. Like what kind of kitchen appliances?
Mainly blenders and juicers. There's also a cooking machine, like a multi-cooker. And they're launching a few products that, you know, haven't been in the loop, but I know they're launching a few new products as well.
Wow. So knocking on doors to figure out what was good and what stuck, and then taking that and scaling an e-commerce company.
Yeah, it did really well. Like I hit seven figures in year one. I was based in Australia, and then eight figures in year two. And that was all out of nothing. So it was a really interesting journey.
Yeah. Cause that's a different sort of take on it than most e-commerce companies would go. I mean, usually, you know, someone will put up a landing page on a website, you know, and kind of try to growth hack it to something. Whereas you actually met with customers door to door, which is like the thing that always, well, what always impresses me is people that get out of the building, quote unquote, go out in the field and like talk to people, because there's nothing like being like in person in front of someone, talking to them about what you're doing. Did you find that that was hugely helpful in the scale of what you were doing?
Yeah. So I started door to door before going down the path of selling on eBay, then creating a website, and then selling on a website without even having an online shopping cart. It was like, you know, I have to contact us. You know, I did it all wrong, but I got a few things right. And one of them is the copywriting. Like I knew how to sell. I knew how to word an ad, what to write on a page, what to say to a customer on the call. But the way I learned those skills is through door knocking. Now, when you door knock, you have to walk in the door and you have to convince the person not to kick you out on the spot. Then you have to convince them to listen to you. Then you have to convince them to try the product. And then you convince them to buy the product a couple of weeks later. So that process, which we call now a funnel, it's the same thing when you knock on doors. And why is it the same? Because you're dealing with people. Whether you're knocking on a door, whether you're taking someone to your website from an ad, whether you're emailing someone, whether you're discussing a deal over the phone, whatever it is, it's a person. And it's, you know, you're dealing with their brain and you're taking their brain through the same process, just different environments, door to door, phone, internet.
Interesting. So like you were doing literally a physical funnel, quote unquote, as opposed to what people, you know, have with like click funnels and online funnels. Did you find, what was your success rate on this door knocking exercise?
Really high. Like when I started door knocking, and I've never done door knocking before, and I'm a very proud person. So knocking on doors and people telling me, hey, leave or whatever, you know, that's not my jam. Like I'm a very proud person. I don't like being treated in a disrespectful way or being below people. But, you know, when you knock on someone's door and you walk into their territory, they've got the upper hand. You're trying to sell them something. So something I wasn't used to. It was a bit difficult, but I did really well. Thankfully, I started doing six figures, the run rate, relatively quickly. How the process was, like how easy it was to sell, because the process was like, it wasn't to sell. My first job was to offer a trial and then sell the product, which was like a water dispenser for offices. And it worked really, really well. But what's interesting is when I tried other products, from LED lights to coffee machines, yogurt for cafes. Sorry, man, my sleeping pattern is screwed. I'm just traveling every 2 days. But yogurt bars for cafes, nothing worked. And then I realized, like, holy shit, like I landed on a product that worked. And I learned the same thing in business. When my first business hit eight figures relatively quickly, the e-com business, I'm like, holy shit, anything I touch will be gold. Right? Look what I just did with this e-com business. And then I had a massive wake-up call where I almost went bankrupt. And I looked like I had a few.
Yeah, we all have. Yeah,
I've launched a few businesses that I launched that didn't do so. I'm like, I should have the Midas touch and all these products didn't work. And yeah, so it was an interesting experience to see. And the same thing happened with my B2B businesses. You know, you land on one. So that's the thing in business. Like, you got to try many things. But when one, so try, you throw many pebbles, as Jim Collins says, throw different pebbles. But when a pebble hits, get the damn cannonball and just go all out. So for entrepreneurship, the hardest part is to land on a winning product or winning strategy. But when you do, go all out.
Yeah, no, I found that too. I found that the, like, and I'm talk with a lot of tech entrepreneurs, right? So they're always building this newfangled SaaS or device or piece of hardware. And, you know, they get really enamored with the thing. Like, here is the thing, the product. And a lot of times they don't validate the market. Like, they don't really think, is this going to be a winner or not? And more importantly, I think what's amazing about that is that sometimes what you think is a winner may or may not be a winner. So were there times where you're like you mentioned before, you were trying to scale this company and you're like, ah, oh, this is going to be it on the Midas touch. What was the differentiating factor between these products? Was it just timing? I mean, it seems like there's an alchemy to it, and you're right. I love the whole analogy of throwing pebbles and then taking the cannonball and just like blowing it up, you know?
Yeah, so you mentioned timing. There's a great video. It's a TED speech by a person called Bill Gross, a very smart person. And he talks about the different factors that determine a business's success. So if anyone Googles Bill Gross, TED, T-E-D, Bill Gross, G-R-O-S-S, you'll thank me. Because he compares various factors to see which one is most likely to lead to a business's success. And he looks at the team, the ID, the business plan, the funding, and timing. By far, timing was the most common factor across businesses that succeeded. So launching a crypto startup right now versus launching a hotel business, you're more likely, there's no guarantees, of course, but you're more likely to become a millionaire from the crypto startup versus an antiquated, COVID-destroyed hotel industry business. So timing just makes success much easier. And that applies with my success as well. My Fruity succeeded because I was selling blenders and juices when I first started at the right time, when the products were booming in Australia and across the world. I got into crypto in 2017, just near the end of a bull run, but, you know, during a bull run. And timing helped me succeed. And I can give multiple examples where timing played a key role in my success. Again, timing alone is not enough for success. And you can be a millionaire in the hotel business today. It's just harder. And business is about increasing your odds of success and reducing the impact of luck over your success. And the more of these boxes that you tick, the more of these determining factors that you tick on your entrepreneurial journey, the less impact luck will have on your success.
Yeah, I always tell people when it comes to like public relations and PR and getting like mentioned in news and stuff, that timing is absolutely everything. Like, if no one's talking about what you're doing, no one's going to cover it. If it's just not a hot topic. And it's interesting that it also applies to products. I never thought of it that way. I mean, I do think of like the macro stuff, like crypto is a good one. NFTs is a good one. Right now, you know, since here in the United States, they just signed the infrastructure bill, or, you know, President Biden just signed the infrastructure bill. So my guess is anything related to infrastructure is going to be hot, at least for a while. It's fascinating that it's like the same when it comes to like growing a business, understanding, like, I love the reducing your luck factor or ticking the boxes so that there are less luck involved. Although luck is, of course, clearly involved. I mean, I think we all would agree that you got to be a little bit of lucky. So, what's the name of the company that's potentially going to go public?
It's called NFT Technologies. So it's expected to list on the stock exchange. I don't know if I can give it an exact date, but just in the next 2 weeks. Yeah, in the next 2 weeks is the expected date. You mentioned NFTs. It's an NFT company. It's called NFT Technologies. It's the first NFT company going public on the stock market. It has the ticker stock market ticker symbol NFT. Has some some big investors and advisors, some big names in the space and in business.
Wow. You're on, I think you're on mute. Oh, yeah, you're on mute.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah, no problem. I'll cut that out. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard me cut out someone called.
Oh, okay.
So it's a, I don't know if you heard. So the company going public, expected to go public in the next 2 weeks. It's called NFT Technologies. It's going public. It's the first NFT company going public on the stock market. And it's going to have the ticker NFT in North America, which is pretty exciting. So that's going to be pretty big news in the crypto space.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I'm assuming that it does NFTs. what's the premise behind it?
Yeah, so you can look at it as a portfolio company that just has a basket of assets within the space. So we invest a lot in the metaverse, in NFT assets, NFT startups, and have our own businesses as well that we start, our own IP that we create as well. So we create businesses like an incubator type business and an accelerator, plus we invest in other assets and businesses.
And the accelerator that you guys have, that's all NFT based, anything to do with NFTs and crypto?
Exactly. Yeah. NFTs, crypto, metaverse, correct.
And so what's your thoughts on Facebook renaming to Meta, since you're sort of in the kind of the vanguard of all of this? Is that a good move for their on their part? I ask because it just seems like everyone, you know, anytime a big company like changes its name and says, the metaverse is where it's at, tends to, as you point out about timing, tends to make that market just explode.
Yeah, so I think first let's look at Facebook changing their name, period, before we say what they changed it to. Facebook changing their name, Facebook has a few products, WhatsApp, Facebook, Instagram, et cetera, Ocular. And out of those products, Facebook is probably number three or four. Instagram is more important than Facebook, at least in my opinion. WhatsApp is more important. You know, less and less people are using Facebook. Still massive, still powerful. But it's the product that's declining while others are increasing in popularity. So I wouldn't be surprised. Like, it just that makes sense to change your name from Facebook when Facebook is the declining product and you've got other products out there. You're no longer Facebook. Well, they changed their name to Meta. That stands for Metaverse. I'm pretty pissed off about it because I'm very bullish on the metaverse. You know, I'm extremely vested in the space and I've been for a while. And I was hoping that we have at least a few months to acquire assets for cheap, to play, you know, to run a few plays before all the craziness and hype comes towards the space. Unfortunately, Facebook screwed that up. So they called themselves Meta. All the hype now is coming to the metaverse. CryptoGate got a bit of a, bit of a push up as well. So it's good for the space. Is it good for Facebook? I think so. Like, I think people don't understand how transformative the metaverse will be to our lives, business and personal. But Facebook does. And don't question, you know, you like them or hate them, don't question their intelligence. So I think they know what they're doing. I'm surprised they managed to get the name, and such a sexy name. So relative to the hype and the term metaverse. So we'll see if it's the right decision. But in my opinion, it looks right. It looks very right.
Well, what is it about the metaverse that you're so bullish about?
It's like asking someone that really understands the internet back in the 90s. What excites you about the internet? And like, it's hard for anyone to really understand or to really understand the answer to that unless you really understand the technology. So if you look at the metaverse, and I don't like to talk in a technical way. What is the metaverse? Well, if you've seen the movie Ready Player One by Steven Spielberg, you'd get an idea of what to expect. Mm-hmm. Essentially, the metaverse is a digital representation of the world we live in today, excluding predetermined physics. What I mean by this is, right now, I'm talking to you on the phone. I'm sitting on this couch. I'm breathing this air here. I'm in Poland for another day. Outside I go, it's cold, it's freezing. I'll probably get on a plane. I'll get on a plane tomorrow. I'll head to to Malta for a day. And Malta is probably going to be cold as well. Then I head to Dubai. It's going to be warm. And this is the physical world.
Yeah.
But I can't jump on a plane or I can't teleport to Malta. I have to go through the airport. I have to go through security. You know, this is life. This is the physics. But the metaverse essentially is a different world where there is no law of physics. So you can actually teleport somewhere. You can have animals talk to you. You can fly. You can teleport. You can swim for 20 hours. You can do whatever you want because physics doesn't apply. The laws of what allows nature to operate here don't apply, but imagination kicks in. And it's an actual world where you can connect with friends, talk to them. You know, instead of connecting on Facebook and seeing photos, you can go in an actual world and chat to people and see them in your eyes and go to a concert. Concerts in the metaverse are making more money than physical concerts already. Travis Scott made like $12 million in a festival a few years ago on Second Life. Usually makes $1 million a festival in the physical world. And you can go to a festival. You can build a business there. You can watch movies within the metaverse. You can see go to a museum within the metaverse. You can watch. You can be part of a movie. Where instead of watching a movie, you walk in that movie. Imagine Jurassic Park, and you're walking around and seeing what's happening.
Yeah.
Wow. So yeah, the opportunities are endless. Gaming is big on the metaverse. Obviously, you can't eat. You can't have sexual intercourse. You know. There's ways already around it, but you know, at least not in the world we live in. You can't make babies, okay, it's a better example. You can't have baby, get someone pregnant in the metaverse, but right. You know, there's things you can't do. You can't actually enjoy food, at least not yet. And I'm sure they'll come up with something where you do this and like the sensors that allow some sort of pleasure that's similar to taste. I don't know, but it's a different world that we can operate in, and this is barely touching the surface. Like this is what I can imagine. But most technologies cannot be envisaged by the, you know, no one in the 1990s imagined me and you to be on a Zoom call or imagine many people to be on a live playing a game live or being or doing everything on a phone.
No. I mean, no, back in the 90s it was dial up. I mean, you had zero bandwidth, right? You know?
Yeah.
Hardly any
Remember that sound?
Yeah. Exactly. No, it's fascinating because I mean, I was there at the dawn of the internet. I was actually at a semiconductor company and we were building chips that went into routers that would, you know, route all the packets. And back then, you know, we're talking, geez, early 90s, almost at 2000s was, you know, the big bubble burst in 2000, 2001 for when it came to internet. Yeah, no one really knew what was going to happen. I mean, we all knew that it was important because probably a lot of it was just the science fiction at the time. You know, you could just sort of envision a world. And I think this is what Ready Player One, there was a book called Ender's Game by Orson Scott Card. Bunch of these kind of science fiction books that sort of, you know, they're 20, 30, 40, 50 years ahead. Kind of looking at what's going to be there. And a lot of these things have come true. I mean, just look at, I mean, Star Trek had a lot of stuff that came true. Of course, not warp drive yet, but I'm sure Elon Musk is working on that. Interesting. Yeah, I'm with you. It was hard to see at the time what the massive amount. I mean, social media didn't exist in the late 90s. No one knew what that was.
Like the cloud, where everything's on the cloud. That's crazy to imagine back then. And like, we cannot imagine life without the internet. It's insane. And I think that the way we look at the metaverse now is the same way we looked at the internet back in the 90s. And the way we look at it in 20 years is the same way we look at the 90s and right now, 20, 30 years. So the human brain is, and that's very important for entrepreneurs to understand, especially when you're in a hyped industry. The human brain tends to overestimate the short-term impact of innovation, but underestimate the long-term potential. Right now, we're in the phase of overestimating the short-term impact of the metaverse because it won't do shit in the short term. It's just too slow. Technology isn't there. But we can't even imagine the long-term impact and potential. So I can't wait for, if you're talking about crypto, and I know everyone's interested in crypto now because there's hype. It happens every few years. So everyone's interested in crypto. I can't wait for the bubble to pop and for things to quiet down. Now, it's not nice to say the bubble to pop, but things to correct and slow down So we can all have some breathing space and build and position ourselves for the next leg in this run.
I'm with you. I mean, the NFT thing is a super fascinating thing for me. I interviewed a guy named Mike that has a company called Tiki. And basically what Tiki's doing is it's taking your personal data, you know, thousands of data points a day, creating an NFT on your smartphone, and then through smart contracts, allowing you to sell rights to that data for companies to market to you. And, you know, he's just like, well, you know, the traditional NFT minting, it takes $100. You can't mint billions of those a day. It's just cost prohibitive. But they came up with a way to mint an NFT on your mobile phone for less than a penny or some number. I don't remember what the number was.
Yeah. So there's a lot of blocks. So there's a lot of blockchains that allow you to mint for very, very cheap. But it's a kind of a battle between minting for cheap and jeopardizing security and decentralization. Right. So I guess very technical here. I won't get into it, but that company seems interesting. I think NFTs are going to change the world we live in today. We talked about the metaverse. The metaverse wouldn't exist without NFTs. The NFTs are the atomic unit of the universe, the metaverse. Yeah. Because the world we live in today won't exist without ownership. E-com wouldn't exist without ownership because people buy products to own them. So I can't imagine not owning my phone or not owning my identity or my AirPods. And I'm sure you can't imagine not owning your home or your books behind you. Just ownership has to exist. Otherwise, I can walk on the street and someone says, hey, give me that phone. I'm like, no, it's my phone. Like, what do you mean your phone? You don't own it. So ownership is key for our world to function. But what the problem was in the metaverse is that ownership, the technology wasn't there to have ownership in the digital world. You can easily right click and copy, and there was nothing stopping you unless there's like a central entity or platform that doesn't allow you to copy something. So NFTs are essentially the technology to allow digital ownership. That's what it stands for. And with digital ownership, now we can actually have a proper metaverse similar to the physical world we live in today. Because now you can have ownership in that digital world.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. I think the ownership piece, the chain of custody, the pedigree. I mean, you know, like when you buy a house, as an example, they have what's called the title search. And I mean, it's this archaic process, but it's a chain of custody. This thing, physical thing, this is who owned it, and this is who has the rights to it. And in some cases, you buy a piece of property, you may not have the rights to the minerals underneath it, which seems odd that someone could actually literally dig underneath your house and pull out the minerals or pull out the oil or whatever. So fascinating. So what kind of questions would you have the next generation of entrepreneur ask themselves as they're sort of coming up? I mean, this world is changing so quick. What should they be asking themselves if they want to be an entrepreneur?
What are the facts? What I mean by this is there's going to be a lot of people, me included, that will just give you all these different bits and pieces of advice. Now, I tend to be relatively objective, where I don't say do this or do that, or this works or that works, or this will happen, that will happen. Instead, I will kind of reference a study or usually studies or known facts that have been proven by evidence. Why do I say this, even though it sounds boring? I mentioned a study by Bill Gross regarding timing. Because most people can't differentiate between causation and correlation, including entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. So when an entrepreneur has a successful business, how much is it because of the reason they think is the reason, because they did X, Y, Z? And how much is it just because it just happened and it was things that are unrelated to them? Did they launch a cannabis business 10 years ago and they were really early and they happened to find a farm that was really inexpensive and they happened to meet someone that had a good technology and it all came together? Or was it because they had a certain managerial style?
Right.
I would argue that their managerial style had nothing to do with their success. It's because they came in early, they found this farm, they found this technology, and they had a friend that had $500 million that could give them money. And all these things came together.
Right.
And even if they got many other things wrong, those things came together and made it into a successful business. Now, how does this help an entrepreneur listening to this? Well, when you're listening to advice, make sure that the person you're listening from is number one, self-aware, and number two, humble. Self-aware because they know what their weaknesses are. They won't give you advice on things they don't understand, because that's probably the worst thing you could do. And then humble is that if they give you advice that doesn't apply or they're wrong about something, they'll say, hey, I'm wrong. Because someone that's not humble will keep giving you that same advice and trying to prove that it's right because they don't want to be wrong. So to conclude, and what I'm trying to say with all these references, as you listen to podcasts like this, as you read books, as you listen to interviews and watch documentaries, try to differentiate facts from people making assumptions about the reasons for their success or recommendations. And then try to listen to people that seem intelligent. Obviously, intelligence is really important, but also more important than intelligence are self-aware and humble, because they'll only talk about what they know, and they'll correct themselves if they got something wrong, or they won't say something and they'll say they don't understand or don't know something, instead of trying to guess the answer and try to save face and protect their ego. So that would be my two cents. And I was very vocal about this back in the Clubhouse days. I used to be very big in Clubhouse because there was just a lot of people just spreading BS on there in terms of business advice. And that kind of got me a bit annoyed.
Yeah, no, I like that. I think for me, it's the first principles and the ground truth. Like, understand the first principles of what's going on and then the ground truth. There's always ground truth. Facts are facts, like you pointed out. The laws of physics, certain truths are self-evident. Like, no one can distribute, you know, you can't, no one can dispute them. So, wow, Mario, thank you so much for taking the time. I know you're busy, super exciting. I'm so glad we get to talk about the metaverse and all. I mean, I'm so fascinated by this and I can't wait to one day continue on the conversation. Best of luck to everything and stay safe.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks so much, Mario, for the interview. Wow, what a fascinating discussion. I think we could have gone on for hours talking about NFTs and the future and stuff. So as promised, here are the actionable insights that I learned from my interview with Mario. Mario advises trying a lot of different things until you find what works. And this may seem counterintuitive because a lot of people say, focus, focus, focus. Well, when you're in your discovery phase of figuring out what you want to do, it's kind of hard to then focus on just one thing. So really, you got to ask the question to yourself is, okay, you know, what of all the things that I'm working on could potentially be big and or something you want to do with your career? Or are there commonalities between all the things you're interested in? As an example, if you're trying to build your skill stack to, you know, do technology or the web or crypto or NFTs, are all the things you're working on related to that core technology? So something to think about. Good timing is one of the most critical predictors of success. Mario relies a lot on studies and evidence, the facts, when he's making decisions. This type of research can also help figure out what might be timely. And this is so important because a lot of times, depending on when the market's going to develop or if a technology is too early or you're too early. I mean, I have been on so many companies where we're just too early. Like, the market wasn't there, right? And so always ask yourself, am I too early to the market? Are there things going on in the marketplace that I need to think about? Is this technology ready for prime time? That's a big one, because even though you may think it's cool, you really got to understand the adoption curve, and you can look all that up from a Gartner adoption curve and sort of stuff. So when asking for advice, look for people who are self-aware and humble. Mario explains that someone who is self-aware knows the limits of what they know. Someone who's humble will acknowledge when they're wrong. And yeah, I mean, you know, I think that's the super important thing when you're looking for mentors or coaches or even co-founders. Like, you can't know everything. I mean, that's the one thing I know for certain, is that I don't know everything clearly, right? Of course, we can have advice and decisions on things that we've done in the past or give advice, but it is super important to know your limitations. So ask yourself, what are my limitations on these sort of things? Who can I go talk to? Is this person credible? And part of credibility is exactly what Mario says, knowing where your knowledge stops. That is pretty critical. Again, no one can know everything. You can have an idea, you can have heuristics, and you can kind of like think your way through it, but there is no one person on the planet that knows everything. So make sure that when you are, again, looking for advice or mentors or coaches or co-founders, that there's a bit of, you know, realization, I think would be the good word, that they have limitations. Everyone has limitations. You just got to know your limitations, right? So there you have it. Some of the actionable insights that I learned from my interview with Mario. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to the Entrepreneur Ethos podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode as much as I did creating it. My hope is that you learned something that can make you a little bit better. If you enjoyed the podcast, please do share it with friends and review it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. You can also join my email list by visiting theentrepreneurethos.com to get my thoughts on what I'm doing to get better, as well as what I'm working on. You can also pick up my book, The Entrepreneur Ethos, if you want to learn the traits, values, and beliefs that I think we need to build a more ethical, inclusive, and resilient entrepreneur, and frankly, world community. Feel free to follow me on Twitter at TheDailyMBA and let me know if you have any questions or recommendations for a guest you'd like me to talk to. Also, drop me a note if you try anything we talked about on this or any other episode. I'd love to hear what's working for you. Until next time, keep getting better.